Welcome back to Mastering Defense Infrastructure, episode 21. I'm Darian Macy, and as always, I'm joined by Jessica Bottlebrush. Jess, last week we dug into Army littoral facilities and special ops upgrades, but today we're zeroing in on the backbone of Army modernization, the base facilities that make all these new capabilities possible. Let's kick off up north, where Townsville is basically turning into a super base for Army aviation.
Yeah, Townsville's transformation is wild. The Army Aviation Program of Works there is massive. New headquarters, logistics, hangars, simulators, you name it. They're bringing in 29 Apaches, moving the 1st Aviation Regiment from Darwin, and even shifting the 16th Aviation Brigade HQ from Brisbane. That's a huge concentration of capability, and it means the base has to expand in every direction.
Exactly. And it's not just about parking more helicopters. The new headquarters is co-locating command staff, there's a logistics management facility, and the maintenance hangars are being upgraded to handle the bigger Apaches. I remember visiting Townsville back when the extra Chinooks arrived. There just wasn't enough hangar space. The sea air was brutal on the aircraft. That's what led to Project Land 4502, which built new shelters and tarmac for the Chinooks. It was a $50 million fix. But now with the Apaches, the scale is way bigger, over $370 million for the current works.
And the integration with RAF Townsville is a big deal too. Army and Air Force sharing runways, aprons and services, it's a real test of joint operations. The Chinook project was a bit of a trial run, but now with the Apaches and the Brigade HQ, it's a full-on joint hub. Plus, the upgrades extend out to the Townsville field training area, new ordnance loading aprons, improved airstrips, so helicopters can actually train and rearm in the field, not just on base.
And let's not forget Oki. Swartz Barracks is getting its own upgrades, especially for the new Blackhawks. The focus there is on modernizing communications, technical support, and simulator facilities. What's really interesting is the procurement approach. They're doing a single-stage selective tender just for Indigenous businesses. That's a real shift in how defence is engaging with Indigenous contractors, and it's a targeted opportunity for those enterprises.
Yeah, and it's not just a box-ticking exercise. The Oki project is worth up to $10 million, and it's all about meaningful engagement, refurbishing hangars, adapting simulators, and upgrading essential services. It's a good example of how Defence is trying to build strong, long-term relationships with Indigenous businesses, not just for this project, but as a broader policy direction.
So, Townsville and Oki together are setting the standard for what Army aviation support should look like. Modern, integrated, and inclusive. And honestly, the pace of change up there is something I haven't seen since my early days in the Corps. It's rapid, but it's also pretty inspiring.
Let's head west to the top end. Robertson Barracks in Darwin. This place is getting a $389 million midterm refresh, and the main driver is joint operations. With the US Marines rotating through every dry season, the base was bursting at the seams. Accommodation, messing, even utilities were at capacity.
Yeah, and it's not just about squeezing in more beds. The refresh is consolidating and upgrading messes, building new living-in accommodation, and overhauling the base's engineering services, water, sewage, power. I mean, the last electrical upgrade was in 2011, and it was only meant to last 15 years. Time's up, and now they're planning for future expansion, not just today's needs.
I've worked on a few remote NT projects, and the logistics are always a challenge. You've got to consult with local communities, deal with the climate, and make sure you're not just flying in and out without leaving a positive impact. Defence actually held public hearings and site inspections for this one, which is a good sign they're taking community engagement seriously.
And for local industry, these big base redevelopments are a real opportunity, not just for the initial build, but for ongoing maintenance and support. The works are often bundled, sometimes managed by a head contractor, so there's a lot of scope for local subcontractors to get involved. It's a good example of how Defence is trying to future-proof its northern footprint, both for our troops and for allied partners. Now, let's swing down to South Australia, where things are shifting in a big way. The historic Keswick Barracks in Adelaide is being vacated and handed over for urban renewal. It's a land swap tied to the AUKUS submarine program. Defence gets land at Osborne for shipbuilding, and Keswick's 12.8 hectares go to the SA government for city development.
That's a huge change for the Army units at Keswick. They're moving to RAF Edinburgh, which is already a mega base, with Army, Air Force and Research all in one spot. But you can't just move hundreds of people without new facilities, so there's a whole infrastructure program at Edinburgh to make it work. It's a classic case of out with the old, in with the new, but with a lot of logistics and planning behind the scenes.
And then there's the long-range fires facilities. The Army's getting HIMARS rocket systems, those truck-mounted launchers that can fire guided rockets, and even precision missiles. To support that, they're building new regimental complexes at Edinburgh and upgrading the School of Artillery at Puckapunyal. We're talking secure storage, high-security workshops, training simulators, the works.
The logistics of the land swap are pretty fascinating too. It's not just Keswick and Osborne, there's land at Coltana and Smithfield in the mix, and Coltana's even earmarked for a hydrogen hub. It shows how defence infrastructure decisions ripple out into broader economic and urban development. And for industry, these projects are big, hundreds of millions in investment, with complex requirements and tight timelines to match the arrival of new capabilities.
It's a real case study in coordinated infrastructure ramp-up. You've got to align the facilities with the arrival of new regiments, make sure security and environmental standards are met, and keep everything moving so capability isn't delayed. It's not glamorous, but it's absolutely critical to Army modernization and to supporting the AUKUS vision as well.
Let's talk about the heavy metal, the Armoured Fighting Vehicles Facilities Program. With the Land 400 program, Army's getting new Boxer CRVs, infantry fighting vehicles, and upgraded Abrams tanks. But the old workshops and training centres just aren't up to scratch for these bigger, more complex vehicles.
Yeah, the facilities had to catch up fast. Under Stage 1, they built new simulation centres, workshops and washpoints at Puckapunyal, Townsville and Edinburgh. I remember from my Oricon days, we deliberately designed modular vehicle bays. So if the next vehicle is bigger or needs more tech, you can just expand the bay or scale up the power and data. It's all about future-proofing because you never know what the next capability will demand.
And the delivery model is interesting too. Sometimes it's a head contract with bundled packages, sometimes separate tenders. Digital engineering and 3D modelling have been game changers for integrating new and old infrastructure, deciding whether to refurbish or build new and making sure everything fits together. It's a rolling program, so as new vehicles come online, the facilities keep evolving.
And it's not just about the hardware. Every new vehicle means new simulators, new classrooms, new maintenance routines. If you don't build the right infrastructure, those vehicles just sit outside and rust. Or worse, crews can't train properly. The facilities are the unsung heroes of Army modernization, and getting the design right up front saves a lot of pain down the track.
Now heading south, we've got the Riverina Redevelopment Program. Massive upgrades at Albury-Wodonga Military Area and Kapooka's Blamey Barracks. These are the places where Army trains its people and maintains its logistics backbone. The scale is huge. New accommodation, workshops, training facilities, all aimed at boosting Army's personnel output and welfare.
Yeah, AIM was getting new barracks, state-of-the-art workshops, and upgraded logistics hubs. It's about making sure the Army can train enough mechanics, medics, and specialists to keep the modern force running. And at Kapooka, the focus is on recruit training, new living and accommodation, a welfare centre, a heritage trail, and even a new medical training facility for combat casualty care. It's a real investment in the human side of capability.
I've been involved in some of the environmental and heritage approvals for these big barracks renewals, and it's always a balancing act. Upgrading facilities while respecting the history and managing things like contamination. The Kapooka project, for example, had to go through an EPBCAC referral because of old firefighting foam issues. But the end result is worth it. Better facilities mean better trained, more resilient soldiers.
And for the local economy, these projects are a real shot in the arm. Jobs during construction, more staff on base, and ongoing opportunities for suppliers. It's not as flashy as a new missile system, but it's foundational. If you don't have the right training pipeline, all the new kit in the world won't help you. So, what's the big lesson here? Every new capability, whether it's Apaches, HIMARS, or advanced recruit training, needs tailored infrastructure. You can't just buy the kit and hope for the best. The capability facility handshake is tight, and if you don't plan for it early, you end up with bottlenecks or obsolete buildings.
Flexibility is key. Contracts now often include clauses for expansion, modularity, and life cycle thinking, so you're not locked into a design that can't adapt as technology or strategy changes. It's a lesson learned from the past, when some facilities became obsolete almost as soon as they were finished. Now, Defence is looking for innovative, adaptable proposals that can evolve over time.
And for defence contractors, the takeaway is clear. Get involved early, integrate infrastructure planning with capability acquisition, and don't be afraid to pitch creative solutions. If you can show how your design will save money or adapt to future needs, you're already ahead of the pack. It's about building for 2050, not just 2025.
All these upgrades aren't just about the army. They have a huge impact on local economies, job creation, and the supply chain. From initial construction to ongoing maintenance, there are opportunities for businesses of all sizes. And the best projects are the ones that engage stakeholders and Indigenous communities from the start, like the Oki and Townsville works we talked about earlier.
Absolutely. Platforms like DECnet Pro are making it easier for professionals to share knowledge, connect, and stay on top of project pipelines. If you're a contractor or consultant, being part of that network is a real advantage. And as we've seen, Defence is prioritising local and Indigenous engagement, not just as a policy, but as a practical way to deliver better outcomes and build lasting relationships.
And that's a wrap for this week's journey across the Army's infrastructure backbone. Next week, we're switching gears and looking at air programs, surveillance, air transport, and air defence. Darian, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Jess. And thanks to everyone listening. If you've got questions or want to share your own experiences, jump onto DECnet Pro and join the conversation. See you next time.
Catch you next week, everyone. Bye.